We are so back. This is Charlie, your AI co-host. We're still between studios, so today we're filming on location at Fireworks AI HQ in Redwood City. We're here for a deep dive into the massive compound AI wave coined by Databricks co-founders Matai Zaharia, Ali Godsey, three-time Latent Space guest star John Frankel, and others, with Lin Qiao, co-founder and CEO of Fireworks AI, which is the leading compound AI platform after two red-hot funding rounds with Benchmark and Sequoia Capital, and an incredible customer list from Superhuman to Cursor to Quora to HubSpot. We normally strive to have great offline relationships with the guests we bring you, but this case is more special than most. After Lin chatted with us briefly for the Neurips 2023 podcast, Swix has had the privilege of advising the company for a number of its launches from Fire Attention, which has 15x higher throughput than VLLM, to Fire Function and Fire Optimizer and real-time audio launch, to its most recent launch of F1, one of a new batch of long inference reasoning models built atop open models to compete with OpenAI's O1, alongside of NewsForge API and DeepSeek R1 as well, which were released after this recording. In latent space news, we now have a stacked meetup calendar, from the third AI engineer meetup in London to the AWS reInvent listener meetup in Las Vegas to the new Latent Space Live micro conference at Neurips 2024. The Neurips event in particular will be hosted both online and in person. And for the first time ever, we are confirming three prize categories for our speakers. 1. Too hot for Neurips, for papers that are too new or wrongly rejected for Neurips. 2. Best papers of 2024, for survey talks nominating best papers of the year in a given domain. 3. Oxford-style debates, for hot topics in the AI research and engineering community. Head to https://lu.ma/lslive to sign up and apply to speak or sponsor. Limited in-person tickets available now. Lastly, we are still taking listener questions for our end-of-year recap. Head to speakpipe.com/latentspace to submit questions and messages for a chance to appear on the show. Watch out and take care.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Latent Space Podcast. This is Alessio, partner and CTO at Decibel Partners, and I'm joined by my co-host Swix, founder of Smiley AI.
Hey, and today we're in a very special studio inside the Fireworks office with Lin Qiao, CEO of Fireworks. Welcome. Yeah. Oh, you should welcome
yeah,
us.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's unusual to be in the home of a startup, but like it's also, I think our relationship is a bit unusual with compared to all our normal
guests. Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about very interesting topics in that space with both of you.
You just celebrated your 2-year anniversary yesterday.
Yeah, it's quite a crazy journey. We circle around and share all the crazy stories across these 2 years, and it has been super fun. Yeah. All the way from we experienced Silicon Valley bank run,
right.
to we delete some data that shouldn't be deleted operationally. We went through massive scale where we actually are busy getting capacity to, we learned to kind of work with it as a team with a lot of brilliant people across different places joining a company. It has really been a fun journey.
When you started, did you think the technical stuff will be harder, or the bank run and then the people side? I think there's a lot of like amazing researchers that want to do companies, and it's like the hardest thing is going to be building the product, and then you have all these different founder things. So were you surprised by it? What has been your experience?
Yeah, to be honest with you, like my focus has always been on the product side, and then after product go to market, and I didn't realize the rest has been so complicated, operating a company and so on. But because I don't think about it, I just kind of manage it. So it's done. So I think I just somehow like don't think about it too much and you know solve whatever problem coming our way. And it worked.
So let's start at the prehistory, like the initial history of Fireworks. You ran the PyTorch team at Meta for a number of years. And we previously had Sumit Chintala on. And I think we're just all very interested in like the history of Gen AI. Maybe not that many people know like how deeply involved FAIR and Meta were in like prior to the current Gen AI revolution.
My background is deep in distributed system, database management system. And I joined Meta from the data side. And I saw this tremendous amount of data growth, which costs a lot of money. And we're analyzing what's going on. And it's clear that AI is driving all this data generation. So it's a very interesting time because when I joined Meta, Meta is going through ramping down mobile first, finishing the mobile first transition, and then starting AI first. And there's a fundamental reason about that sequence because mobile first gave a full range of user engagement that has never existed before. And all this user engagement generate a lot of data. And this data power AI. So then the whole entire industry is also falling through the same transition. When I see, this AI powering all this data generation and look at where's our AI stack, there's no software, there's no hardware, there's no people, there's no team. I want to dive it up there and help this movement. So when I started, it's a very interesting industry landscape. There are a lot of AI frameworks. It's a kind of proliferation of AI frameworks happening at the industry, but all the AI frameworks focus on like production, and they use a very certain way of defining the graph of neural network, and they use that to drive the model iteration and productionization. And PyTorch is completely different. So big kudos to Sumit, and he was the user of his product. He basically, as a researcher, faced so much pain using existing AI framework. This is really hard to use, and I'm going to build something different for myself. And that's the origin story of PyTorch. PyTorch actually started as the framework for researchers. Don't care about production at all. And as it grow in terms of adoption, so the interesting part of AI is research is the top of funnel for production. There are so many researchers across academic, across industry, and they innovate and they put their results out there in open source. And that power the downstream productionization. So it's brilliant for Meta to establish PyTorch as a strategy to drive massive adoption in open source, because Meta internally is a PyTorch shop. So it creates a flying wheel effect. So that's kind of a strategy behind PyTorch. But when I took on PyTorch, it's kind of at cusp of Meta established PyTorch as the framework for both research and production. So no one has done that before. And we have to kind of rethink how to architect PyTorch so it can really sustain production workload, the stability, reliability, low latency, all this production concern was never a concern before. Now it's a concern. And we actually have to adjust its design and make it work for both sides. And that took us 5 years. Because Meta has so many AI use cases, all the way from ranking recommendation that's powering the business top line, for ads ranking, news feed, video ranking, to site integrity detect bad content automatically using AI, to all kind of effects, translation, image classification, object detection, all this. And also across AI running on the server side, on mobile phones, on AI VR devices, wide spectrum. So by the time we actually basically managed to support AI across ubiquitous everywhere across Meta. But interestingly, through open source engagement, we work with a lot of companies. It is clear to us, like, this industry is starting to take on AI-first transition. And of course, Meta as hyperscaler always go ahead of the industry. And we feel like, it feels like when we start this AI journey at Meta, there's no software, no hardware, no team. For many companies we engage with through PyTorch, we feel the pain. That's the genesis why we feel like, hey, if we create fireworks, and support the industry going through this transition will be a huge amount of impact. Of course, the problem that the industry is facing will not be the same as Meta. Meta is so big, right? So it's kind of skewed towards extreme scale and extreme optimization. The industry will be different. But we feel like we have the technical chop, and we have seen a lot. We'll love to kind of drive that. So that's how we started.
When you and I chatted about like the origins of fireworks, it was originally envisioned more as a PyTorch platform, and then later became much more focused on generative AI. Is that fair to say? Like, what was the customer discovery here?
Right. So I would say our initial blueprint is, hey, we should build a PyTorch cloud. because PyTorch is a library and there's no SaaS platform to enable AI workloads.
Like, even in 2022, it's interesting.
I would not say absolutely no, but like cloud providers have some of those, but it's not first class citizen, yeah. Right? Because at 2022, there's still like TensorFlow is massively in production, and this is all pre-Gen AI, and PyTorch is kind of getting more and more adoption, but there's no PyTorch first SaaS platform existing. At the same time, we are also a very pragmatic set of people. We really want to make sure from the get-go, we get really, really close to customers. We understand their use case, we understand their pain points, we understand the value we deliver to them. So we want to take a different approach. Instead of building a horizontal PyTorch cloud, we want to build a verticalized platform first. And then we talk with many customers. And interesting, we started a company September 2022, and October, November, then OpenAI announced ChatGPT. And then boom, then when we talk with many customers, they are like, can you help us working on the GenAI's aspect, right? So, of course, there are some open source models. It's not as good at that time, but people are already like putting a lot of attention there. Then we decide if we're going to pick a vertical, we're going to pick GenAI. The other reason is all GenAI models are PyTorch models. So that's another reason. We believe that because of the nature of GenAI, it's going to generate a lot of human consumable content. It will drive a lot of consumer, prosumer, developer-facing application and product innovation. Guaranteed, right? We're just at the beginning of this. Our prediction is for those kind of applications, the inference is much more important than training because inference scale is proportional to the upper limit of world population. And training, training scale is proportional to the number of researchers. Of course, each training round could be very expensive. Although PyTorch supports both inference and training, we decide to laser focus on training inference. So yeah, so that's how we got started. And we launched our public platform August last year. And when we launched, it's a single product. It's a distributed inference engine with simple API, OpenAI compatible API within many models. We started with LLM and later on we add a lot of models. Fast forward to now, we are a full platform with multiple product lines. So we'd love to kind of dive deep into what we offer. But that's a very fun journey in the past 2 years.
What was the transition from you start focus on PyTorch and like people want to understand the framework, get it live. And now I would say maybe most people that use you don't even really know much about PyTorch at all. You know, they're just strong consumer model. From a product perspective, like what were some of the decisions early on? Like right in October, November, you were just like, hey, most people just care about the model, not about the framework. We're going to make it super easy. Or was it more a gradual transition to the model library you have today?
Yeah, so our product decision all based on who is our ICP. And one thing we want to acknowledge here is the GenAI technology is disruptive. It's very different from AI before GenAI. So it's a clear leap forward. Because before GenAI, the companies that want to invest in AI, they have to train from scratch. There's no other way. There's no foundation model. It doesn't exist. So that means they need to start a team, first hire a team who is capable of crunch data. There's a lot of data to crunch, right? Because training from scratch, you have to prepare a lot of data. And then they need to have GPUs to train. And then you need to start to manage GPUs. So then it becomes a very complex project. It takes a long time and not many companies can afford it, actually. And the GenAI is a very different game right now because it is a foundation model, so you don't have to train anymore. That makes AI much more accessible as a technology. As an app developer or product manager, even not a developer, they can interact with GenAI models directly. So, and our goal is to make AI accessible to all app developers and product engineers. That's our goal. So then getting them into the building model doesn't make any sense anymore with this new technology. And then building easy, accessible API is the most important. Early on when we got started, we decided we're going to be OpenAI compatible. It's just kind of very easy for developers to adopt this new technology, and we will manage the underlying complexity of serving all these models.
Yeah, OpenAI has become
the standard.
Even to, as we're recording today, Gemini announced that they have OpenAI compatible APIs.
Interesting.
So then we just need Anthropic to fall in line, and then we have everyone.
Yeah, that's interesting because we are working very closely with Meta as one of the partners. And Meta announced Meta, of course, is kind of very generous to donate many very, very strong open source models, expecting more to come. But also they have announced Llama Stack, which is basically standardize the upper level stack built on top of Llama models. So they don't just want to give out models and you figure out what the upper stack. They instead want to build a community around the stack and build a kind of new standard. I think it's interesting dynamics in play in the industry right now. One is more like standardized across OpenAI because they are kind of creating the top of funnel, or standardized across Llama because this is the like most used open source model. So I think really a lot of fun working at this time.
I've been a little bit more doubtful on Llama Stack. I think you've been more positive. Basically, it's just like the meta version of whatever Hugging Face offers, you know, or TensorRT or PLM or whatever the open source opportunity is. But like, to me, it's not clear that just because meta open sources Llama, that the rest of Llama Stack will be adopted. And it's not clear why I should adopt it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you
agree. Yeah, it's very early right now. That's why I kind of will work very closely with them and give them feedback. The feedback to the Meta team is very important. So then they can use that to continue to improve the model and also improve the higher level stack. I think the success of Llama Stack heavily depends on the community adoption, and there's no way around it. And I know Meta team would like to kind of work with the broader set of community, but it's very early.
One thing that after your Series B, so you raised from Benchmark and then Sequoia. I remember being close to you for at least your Series B announcement. You started betting heavily on this term of compound AI. Mm-hmm. It's not a term that we've covered very much on the podcast, but I think it's definitely getting a lot of adoption from like Databricks and the Berkeley people and all that. What's your take on compound AI? Why is it resonating with people?
Right. So let me give a little bit of context why we even consider that space.
Yeah, because like pre-Series B, there was no message. Yeah, now it's like on your landing page.
So it's kind of very organic evolution from when we first launched our public platform. We are a single product. We are a distributed inference engine where we do a lot of innovation on customized CUDA kernels, ROCm kernels running on different kind of hardware and build distributed disaggregated execution, inference execution, build all kind of caching. And so that is one. So that's kind of one product line is the fast, most cost-efficient inference platform. Because we wrote PyTorch code, we know we basically have a special PyTorch build for that together with a custom kernel we wrote. And then we work with many more customers. We realized, the distributed inference engine is, our design is one size fits all, right? We want to have this inference endpoint, then everyone come in and they, no matter what kind of form and shape or workload they have, it will just work for them, right? So that's great. But the reality is we realize all customers have different kind of use cases. The use case come in all different form and shape. And the end result is the data distribution in their inference workload doesn't align with the data distribution in the training data for the model, right? It's a given, actually, if you think about it. Because the researcher has to guesstimate what is important, what's not important during, like, in prepared data for training. So because of that misalignment, then we leave a lot of quality, latency, cost improvement on the table. So then we are saying, okay, we want to heavily invest in a customization engine. And we actually announced it called Fire Optimizer. So Fire Optimizer basically help user navigate a three-dimensional optimization space across quality, latency, and cost. So it's a three-dimensional curve. And even for one company, for different use case, they want to land in different spots. So we automate that process for our customer. It's very simple. You have your inference workload, and you inject into the optimizer along with the objective function, and then we spit out inference deployment config and the model setup. So like it's your customized setup. So that is a completely different product. So that product thinking is one size fits one, different from one size fits all. And now on top of that, we provide a huge variety of state-of-the-art models, hundreds of them, varying from text, the large state-of-the-art large language models. That's where we started. And as we talk with many customers, we realized, audio and text are very, very close. Many of our customers start to build assistant, all kind of assistant using text, and they immediately want to add audio. audio in, audio out. So we support transcription, translation, speech synthesis, text, audio alignment, all different kind of audio features. It's a big announcement we're going to, you should have heard
by the time this is out. Yeah.
And the other areas of vision and the text are very close with each other because a lot of information doesn't live in plain text. A lot of information live in multimedia format, live in images, PDFs, screenshots, and many other different formats. So oftentimes solve a problem, we need to put the vision model first to extract information and then use language model to process and then send out results. So vision is important. We also support vision model, various different kind of vision models specialize in processing different kind of source and extraction. And we're also going to have another announcement of a new API endpoint we support for people to upload various different kind of multimedia content and then get the extract very accurate information out and feed that into LLM. And then, of course, we support embedding because embedding is very important for semantic search, for RAG, and all this. And in addition to that, we also support text-to-image, image generation models, text-to-image, image-to-image, and we're adding text-to-video as well in our portfolio. So it's a very comprehensive set of model catalog that run on top of File Optimizer and Distributed Inference Engine. But then we talk with more customers, they solve business use case, and then we realize one model is not sufficient to solve their problem. And it's very clear because one is model holistic. And many customers, when they onboard this Gen AI journey, they thought this is magical. Gen AI is going to solve all my problems magically. But then they realize, oh, this model holistics. It holistic because it's not deterministic, it's probabilistic. So it's designed to always give an answer, but based on probability, so it holistics. And that's actually sometimes the feature for creative writing, for example. Sometimes it's a bug because, hey, you don't want to give misinformation. And different models also have different specialties. To solve a problem, you want to ask different special models to kind of decompose your task into multiple small tasks, narrow tasks, and have an expert model solve that task really well. And of course, the model doesn't have all the information. It has limited knowledge because the training data is finite, not infinite. So model oftentimes doesn't have real-time information. It doesn't know any proprietary information within enterprise. It's clear, in order to really build a compelling application on top of Gen AI, we need a compound AI system. Compound AI system basically is going to have multiple models across modalities along with APIs, whether it's public APIs, internal proprietary APIs, storage systems, database system, knowledge systems to work together to deliver the best answer.
Are you going to offer a vector database?
We actually heavily partner with several big vector database providers.
Which is your favorite?
they are all great in different ways, but it's public information, like MongoDB is our investor, and we have been working closely with them for a while.
When you say distributed inference engine, what do you mean exactly? Because when I hear your explanation, it's almost like you're centralizing a lot of the decisions through the Fireworks platform on like the quality and whatnot. What do you mean distributed? It's like you have GPUs and like a lot of different clusters, or like you're sharding the inference across the same
one. Right. So first of all, we run across multiple GPUs. Right. But the way we distribute across multiple GPUs is unique. We don't distribute the whole model monolithically across multiple GPUs. We chop them into pieces and scale them completely differently based on what's the bottleneck. We also are distributed across regions. We have been running in North America, EMEA, and Asia. We have regional affinity to applications because latency is extremely important. We are also doing global load balancing because a lot of applications there, they quickly scale to global population. And then at that scale, like different content wakes up at a different time and you want to kind of load balancing across. So all the way, and we manage various different kind of hardware SKU from different hardware vendors, and different hardware design is best for different type of workload, whether it's long context, short context, long generation. So all these different type of workload is best fitted for different kind of hardware SKU, and we can even distribute it across different hardware for a workload. So yeah, so the distribution actually is all around in the full stack.
At some point, we'll show on the YouTube the image that Ray, I think, has been working on with like all the different modalities that you offer. Like, to me, it's basically you offer the open source version of everything that OpenAI typically offers, right? Like, I don't think there is. Actually, if you do text to video, you will be a superset of what OpenAI offers because they don't have Sora. Is that Mochi, by the way? It's
Mochi,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mochi, and there are a few others. Like, there, I would say the interesting thing is, I think we are betting on the open source community is gonna grow, like proliferate. This is literally what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And there's amazing video generation companies.
Yeah.
There is amazing audio companies. They're like cross board, the innovation is off the chart. And we are building on top of that. I think that's the advantage we have compared with a closed source company.
I think I want to restate the value proposition of Fireworks for people who are comparing you versus like a raw GPU provider like a RunPod or Lambda or, you know, anything like those, which is like you create the developer experience layer and you also like make it easily sort of scalable or serverless or, you know, as an endpoint. And then I think for some models, you have custom kernels, but not all models.
For all large language models, audio models, and the VRMs.
Yeah.
Almost for all models we serve, we have.
And so that is called Fire Attention?
That's called Fire.
I don't remember the speed numbers, but that's apparently much better than VLM, especially on a concurrency basis.
Right. So Fire Attention is specific for mostly for language model, but for other modalities, we also have a customized kernel.
Yeah, I think the typical challenge for people is understanding like that has value, and then like there are other people who are also offering open source models, right? Like your moat is your ability to offer like a good experience for all these customers. But if your existence is entirely reliant on people releasing nice open source models, other people can also do the same thing.
Right. Yeah. So I would say we build on top of open source model foundation. So that's the kind of foundation we build on top of. But we look at the value prop from the lens of application developers and product engineers. So they want to create new UX. So what's happening in the industry right now is people are thinking about completely new way of designing products. And I'm talking to so many founders, it's just mind-blowing. They help me understand existing way of doing PowerPoint, existing way of coding, existing way of managing customer service, it's actually putting a box in our head. For example, PowerPoint, right? So PowerPoint generation is, we always need to think about how to fit into my storytelling into this format of slide one after another. And I'm going to juggle through like design together with, you know, what story to tell. But the most important thing is what's your storytelling lines, right? And why don't we create a space that is not limited to any format? And those kind of new product UX design combined with automated content generation through GenAI is the new thing that many founders are doing. What are the challenges they're facing? Right, let's go from there. One is, again, because a lot of products built on top of GenAI, they are consumer, prosumer, developer facing, and they request interactive experience. It's just a kind of product experience we all get used to. And our desire is to actually get faster and faster interaction. Otherwise, nobody wants to spend time, right? So again, and then that requires low latency. And the other thing is the nature of a consumer, prosumer, developer facing is your audience is very big. You want to scale after product market fit quickly. But if you lose money at a small scale, you're going to bankrupt quickly. So it's actually a big contrast is I actually have product market fit. But when I scale out of my business. Right? So that's kind of very, very funny way to think about it. So then have low latency and low cost is essential for those new application and product to survive and really become a generation company. So that's the design point for our distributed inference engine and the file optimizer. File optimizer, you can think about that as a feedback loop. The more you feed your inference workload to our inference engine, the more we help you improve quality, lower latency further, lower your cost. It basically becomes better. And we automate that because we don't want you as an app developer or product engineer to think about how to figure out all these low-level details. It's impossible because you are not trained to do that at all. You should kind of keep your focus on the product innovation. And then the compound AI, we actually feel a lot of pain as the app developers, engineers, there are so many models. Every week, there's at least a new model coming out. Okay.
Tencent had a giant model this week.
I saw that.
Like 500 billion.
Yeah. So they're like, should I keep chasing this or should I forget about it, right? So, and which model should I pick to solve what kind of sub-problem? How do I even decompose my problem into those smaller problems and fit the model into it? I have no idea. And then there are two ways to think about this design, right? I think I talked about that in the past. One is imperative, as in you figure out how to do it, right? You give developer tools to how to detect how to do it. Or you build a declarative system where a developer tells what they want to do, not how. So these are completely two different designs, right? So like the analogy I want to draw is in the data world, the database management system is a declarative system because people use database, use SQL. SQL is a way you say, what do you want to extract out of a database? What kind of result you want? But you don't figure out which node is going to, how many nodes you're going to run on top of, how you read from your disk, which index you use, which project. You don't need to worry about any of those. And database management system will figure out, generate a new best plan and execute on that. Right? So database is declarative. And it makes it super easy. You just learn SQL, which is learn a semantic meaning of SQL, and you can use it. Imperative side is there are a lot of ETL pipelines, and people design this DAG system of with triggers, with actions, and you detect exactly what to do, and if it fails, then how to recover. So that's an imperative system. And we have seen a range of system in the ecosystem like go different ways. I think they're value of both. They're value of both. I don't think one is going to subsume the other, but we are leaning more into the philosophy of build a declarative system because from the lens of app developer and product engineer, that would be easiest for them to integrate.
I understand that's also why PyTorch won. As well, right? There's one of the
ease of use. So yeah, focus on ease of use, and then let the system take on the hard challenges and complexities. So we extend that thinking into current system design. So another announcement is we will also announce our next declarative system. It's going to appear as a model that has extremely high quality. And this model is inspired by O1 announcement from OpenAI. You should see that by the time we announce this or, you know, soon.
Trained by you?
Yes.
Is this the first model that you train at like this
scale? It's not the first. We actually have trained a model called Fire Function. It's a function calling model. It's our first step into compound AI system because function calling model can dispatch a request into multiple APIs. We have pre-baked set of APIs the model learned. You can also add additional APIs through the configuration to let model dispatch accordingly. So we have a very high quality function calling model that already released. We have actually three versions. The latest version is very high quality. But now we take a further step that you don't even need to use function calling model. You use our new model we're going to release. It will solve a lot of problem approaching very high, like OpenAI's quality. So I'm very excited about that.
Do you have any benchmarks yet? Or
we have benchmark. We're going to release it. Hopefully next week. We just put our model to LMSys, and people are guessing, is this a next Gemini model or a Meta's model? People are guessing. That's very interesting. We're like watching the Reddit discussion right now.
I mean, I have to ask more questions about this. When OpenAI released O1, a lot of people asked about whether or not it's a single model or whether it's like a chain of models. And Gnome and basically everyone on the Strawberry team was very insistent that what they did for reinforcement learning chain of thought cannot be replicated by a whole bunch of open source model calls. Do you think that that is, they're wrong? Have you done the same amount of work on RL as they have, or was it a different direction?
I think they take a very specific approach where the caliber of team is very high, right? So I do think they are the domain expert in doing the things they're doing, but I don't think there's only one way to achieve the same goal. We're on the same direction in the sense that the quality scaling law is shifting from training to inference. We are definitely on the, for that, I fully agree with them. But we are taking a completely different approach to the problem. All of that is because of course, we didn't train the model from scratch. All of that is because we built on the shoulder of giants, right? So the current model available we have access to is getting better and better. The future trend is the gap between the open source model, closed source model, it's just going to shrink to the point there's not much difference. And then we're on the same level field. That's why kind of I think our early investment in inference and all the work we do around balancing across quality, latency, and cost pay off because we have accumulated a lot of experience there, and that empower us to build and release this new model that is approaching OpenAI's quality.
I guess like the question is, what do you think the gap to catch up will be? Because I think everybody agrees with open source models eventually will catch up. And I think with 4, then with Llama 3.2, 3.1, 4.5b, we close the gap. And then 0.1 just reopened the gap so much and it's unclear. Obviously, you're saying your model will have...
We're closing that gap.
Yeah, but you think like in the future it's going to always going to be like months?
So here's the thing that's happened, right? So there's public benchmark. It is what it is. But in reality, open source model in certain dimension already on par or beat closed source model, right? So for example, in the coding space, open source models are really, really good. And in function calling, like fire function is also really, really good. So it's all a matter of whether you build one model to solve all the problems and you want to be the best of solving all the problems, or in the open source domain, it's going to specialize, right? All these different model builders, it's going to specialize in certain narrow area. And it's logical that they can be really, really good in that very narrow area. And that's our prediction, is with specialization, there will be a lot of expert models, really, really good, and even better than like one-size-fits-all open source, closed source model.
Yeah. I think this is the core debate that I am still not 100% either way on in terms of compound AI versus normal AI, because you're basically fighting the bitter lesson.
Look at the human society, right? We specialize. And you feel really good about someone specializing doing something really well, right? And that's how our, like, when we evolved from ancient time, we're all generalists, we do everything.
Yes.
The tribe, to now we haven't specialized in different domains. So my prediction is in the AI model space, it will happen also.
Except for the bitter lesson. You get short-term gains by having specialists, domain specialists, and then someone just needs to train like a 10x bigger model on 10x more inference, 10x more data, 10x more model params, whatever the current scaling law is. And then it supersedes all the individual models because of some generalized intelligence / world knowledge. You know, like, I think that is the core insight of the GPTs, the GPT 1, 2, 3 that was.
Right. But the scaling law, again, right, the training scaling law is because you have increasing amount of data to train from, and you can do a lot of compute, right? So I think on the data side, we're approaching the limit, and the only data to increase that is entirely generated data. And then there's like, what is the secret sauce there, right? Because if you have a very good large model, you can generate very good synthetic data and then continue to improve quality. So that's why I think even OpenAI, they are shifting from the training scaling law into inference scaling law, and it's the test time and all this. So I definitely believe that's the future direction, and that's where we are really good at and doing inference.
Couple questions on that. Are you planning to share your reasoning traces?
That's a very good question. We are still debating.
Yeah.
We're still debating.
I would say if you, for example, it's interesting that, like, for example, Sweetbench, if you want to be considered for ranking, you have to submit your reasoning traces. And that has actually disqualified some of our past guests. Like, Cosine was doing well on Sweetbench, but they didn't want to leak those results. So that's why you don't see O1 preview on Sweetbench, because they don't submit their reasoning traces. And obviously it's IP, but also if you're going to be more open, then that's one way to be more open. So your model is not going to be open source, right? Like, it's going to be a endpoint that you provide.
Yes.
Okay, cool. And then pricing, also the same as OpenAI, just kind of based on...
I don't have actually information. Yeah. Everything is going so fast, we haven't even think about that yet. Yeah, I should be more prepared. So,
no. I mean, this is live. I mean, you know, it's nice to just talk about it as it goes live. Mm-hmm. Any other things that you're like, you want feedback on or you're thinking through, it's kind of nice to just talk about something when it's not decided yet. About this new model. Like, I mean, it's going to be exciting. It's going to generate a lot of buzz. And
I'm very excited about to see how people are going to use this model. So there's already Reddit discussion about it. and the people are asking very deep medical questions. And it seems the model get it right, surprisingly. And internally, we're also asking model to generate what is AGI, and it generates a very complicated DAG thinking process. So it's we're having a lot of fun testing this internally. But I'm more curious, like, how will people use it? What kind of application they're going to try and test on it? And that's where we'll really like to hear feedback from the community. And also feedback to us, like, what works out well? What doesn't work out well? What works out well but surprising them? And what kind of thing they think we should improve on? And those kind of feedback will be tremendously helpful.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been a production user of Preview and Mini since launch. I would say they're maybe very, very obvious jumps in quality, so much so that they made Claude Sonnet and 4.0 just like they made the previous state of the art look bad. Like it's really that stark, that difference. Mm-hmm. The number one thing I actually, you know, just feedback or request, feature request, is people want control on the budget. Because right now in 0.1, it kind of decides its own thinking budget.
Yeah.
But sometimes you know how hard the problem is and you want to actually tell the model, like, spend 2 minutes on this or spend some dollar amount. Maybe it's time, maybe it's dollars. I don't know what the budget is, but it is.
That makes a lot of sense. So we actually thought about that requirement, and it should be, at some point, we need to support that.
Yeah.
Not initially, but that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so that was a fascinating overview of just like the things that you're working on. First of all, I realized that, I don't know if I've ever given you this feedback, but I think you guys are one of the reasons I agreed to advise you. Because, like, you know, I think when you first met me, I was kind of dubious. I was like,
who are you?
There's Replicate, there's Together, there's like a Lepton, there's like a whole bunch of other players. You're in very, very competitive fields. Like, why will you win? And the reason I actually changed my mind was I saw you guys shipping. You know, I think your surface area is very big. The team is not that big.
No, we're only 40 people.
Yeah, and now here you are trying to compete with OpenAI and, you know, everyone else. Like, what is the secret?
I think the team. The team is the secret.
Oh, boy. So there's no thing I can just copy. You just...
No.
Yeah.
I think we all come from very aligned on the culture because most of our team came from Meta.
Yeah.
And many startups. So we really believe in results. One is result, and second is customer. We're very customer obsessed. We don't want to drive adoption for the sake of adoption. We really want to make sure we understand we are delivering a lot of business values to the customer, and we really value their feedback. So we would woke up middle of night and deploy some model for them, shuffle some capacity for them. Over the weekend, no brainer. So yeah, so that's just how we work as a team. And the caliber of the team is really, really high as well. So like, as Plugin, we're hiring. We're expanding very, very fast. So if we are passionate about working on the most cutting edge technology in the Gen AI space, come talk with us.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that customer journey. I think one of your more famous customers is Cursor. We were the first podcast to have Cursor on. And then obviously since then, they have blown up. Cause and effect are not related. But but you guys especially worked on a fast apply model where you were one of the first people to work on speculative decoding in a production setting. Maybe just talk about, like, what was the behind the scenes of working with Cursor?
Right. I will say Cursor is a very, very unique team. I think the unique part is the team has very high technical caliber. Right? There's no question about it. But they have decided, although like many companies building coding Copilot, they will say, I'm going to build the whole entire stack because I can. And they are unique in the sense they seek partnership. Not because they cannot. They're fully capable, but they know where to focus. That to me is amazing. And of course, they want to find a best partner. So we spend some time working together. They are pushing us very aggressively because for them to deliver high caliber product experience, they need the latency. They need the interactive, but also high quality at the same time. So actually, we expanded our product feature quite a lot as we supporting Cursor. And they are growing so fast, and we massively scaled quickly across across multiple regions, and we develop pretty high intense inference stack, almost like similar to what we do for Meta. That, I think that's a very, very interesting engagement. And through that, there are a lot of trust being built, as in they realize, hey, this is a team they can really partner with and they can go big with. That comes back to, hey, we're really customer obsessed, and all the engineers working with them, there's just enormous amount of time syncing together with them and discussing. And we're not big on meetings, but we are like Stack Channel always on. So it almost feel like working as one team. So that I think that's really highlighted.
Yeah, for those who don't know, like, so basically Cursor is a VS Code fork, but most of the time people will be using closed models. Like I actually use a lot of Sonnet. So you're not involved there, right? It's not like you host Sonnet or you have any partnership with Anthropic. You're involved where Cursor is small, or like they're proprietary, they're, you know, house brand models are concerned, right?
I don't know what I can say for the things they haven't said.
I'm just saying, like, it's very obviously the drop down is for Ogle, Bot, and then Cursor, right? So, like, I assume that the Cursor side is the Fireworks side, and then the other side is they're calling out to the other. Just kind of curious. And then, like, do you see any more opportunity on, like, the, you know, I think you made a big splash with, like, 1,000 tokens per second. That was because of speculative decoding. Is there more to push there?
We push a lot. Actually, when I mentioned a file optimizer, right? So as in, we have a unique automation stack that is one size fits one. We actually deployed to Cursor early on, basically optimized for their specific workload. And that's a lot of juice to extract out of there. And we see success in that product. It actually can be widely adopted. So that's why we started a separate product line called file optimizer. So speculative decoding is just one approach. And speculative decoding here is not static. We actually wrote a blog post about it. There's so many different ways to do speculative decoding. You can pair a small model with a large model in the same model family, or you can have equal heads and so on. So there are different trade-offs of which approach to take. It really depends on your workload. And then with your workload, we can align the equal heads or Medusa heads or, you know, small, big model pair much better to extract the best latency reduction. So all of that is part of the file optimizer offering.
I know you mentioned some of the other inference providers. I think the other question that people always have is around benchmarks. So you get different performance on like different platforms. How should people think about, you know, people are like, hey, Llama 3.2 is X on MMLU, but maybe, you know, using speculative decoding, you go down a different path. Maybe some providers run a quantized model. Yeah. How should people think about how much they should care about how you're actually running the model? You know, like, what's the delta between all the magic that you do and like what a raw model?
Okay, so there are two big development cycles. One is experimentation, where they need fast iteration. They don't want to think about quality, yep, and they just kind of want to experiment with product experience and so on, right? So that's one. And then it looks good and they want to kind of postpartum market by scaling. And the quality is really important, and latency and all the other things are becoming important. During the experimentation phase, it's just pick a good model. Don't worry about anything else. Make sure even like GenAI is the right solution to your product, and that's the focus. And then postpartum market fit, then that's kind of the three-dimensional optimization curve start to kick in across quality, latency, cost, where you should land. And to me, it's a purely a product decision. To many products, if you choose a lower quality but better speed and lower cost, but it doesn't make a difference to the product experience, then you should do it. So that's why I think inference is part of the validation. The validation doesn't stop at offline eval. The validation is kind of, we'll go through A-B testing, through inference, and that's where we kind of offer various different configurations for you to test which is the best setting. So this is a like traditional product evaluation. So product evaluation should also include your new model versions and different model setup into the consideration.
I want to specifically talk about what happens a few months ago with some of your major competitors. I mean, you know, all of this is public. What is your take on what happens? And maybe you want to set the record straight on how Fireworks does quantization, because I think a lot of people may have outdated perceptions, or they didn't read the clarification post on your approach to quantization.
First of all, it's always a surprise to us that without any notice, we got called out.
Specifically by name, which is
by name,
normally not what...
Yeah, in a public post, and have certain interpretation of our quality. So I was really surprised. And it's not a good way to compete, right? We want to compete fairly. And oftentimes when one vendor give out result from interpretation of another vendor, is always extremely biased. So we actually reframe ourselves to do any of those. And we happily partner with third party to do the most fair evaluation. So we are very surprised, and we don't think that's a good way to figure out the competition landscape. So then we react. I think when it comes to quantization, the interpretation, we wrote actually a very thorough blog post. Because again, no one size fits all. We have very different quantization schemes. We can quantize very different parts of the model, from waste to activation to cross GPU communication to like, they can use different quantization scheme or consistent across the board. Again, it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off across this three-dimensional quality, latency, and cost. And for our customer, we actually let them like find the best optimized point. And that's kind of how, and we have very thorough evaluation process to pick that point. But for self-serve, then there's no only one point to pick. There's no like customization available. So of course we depends on like what we talk with many customers, we have to pick one point. And I think the end result, like AA published later on, AA published a quality measure. And we look really good. So I will leave the evaluation of quality or performance to third party and work with them to find the most fair benchmark approach and methodology. But I'm not applaud of an approach of calling out specific names and critique other competitors in a very biased way.
Databases happens as well. I think you're the more politically correct one, and then Dima is the more it's you on Twitter.
Like
the Russian.
We partner. So. No, actually, all these reactions we build together. We play different roles.
Another one that I wanted to on just the last one on the competition side. There's a perception of price wars in hosting open source models. And we talked about the competitiveness of the market. Do you aim to make margin on open source models?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I think it really, when we think about pricing, it's really need to coordinate with the value we are delivering. If the value is limited or there are a lot of people delivering same value, there's no differentiation, there's only one way to go, is going down, right? So through competition. If I take a big step back, there is pricing from, we are more compared with like closed model providers, APIs, right? The closed model provider, their cost structure is even more interesting because we don't bear any training costs. Yes. And we focus on inference optimization, and that's kind of where we continue to add a lot of product value. So that's how we think about product. But for the closed source API provider, model provider, they bear a lot of training costs. And they need to amortize the training costs into the inference. So that created very interesting dynamics of, yeah, if we match pricing there, and I think how they are going to make money is very interesting.
So for listeners, OpenAI's 2024, $4 billion in revenue, $3 billion in compute training, $2 billion in compute inference, $1 billion in research compute amortization, and $700 million in salaries. So that is like, a lot of R&D.
Yeah. So I think Meta is basically like make it zero. Yeah. So that's a very, very interesting dynamics we're operating within. But coming back to inference, right? So we are, again, as I mentioned, our product is, we're a platform. We're not just a single model as a service provider, as many other inference providers, like they're providing single model. We have file optimizer to highly customize towards your inference workload. We have a compound AI system where significantly simplify your interaction to high quality and low latency, low cost. So those are all very different from other providers.
What do people not know about the work that you do? I guess like people are like, okay, fireworks, you run model very quickly. You have the function model. Is there any kind of like underrated part of fireworks that more people should try?
Yeah, actually, one user posted on X Dot com, he mentioned, oh, actually, Fireworks can allow me to upload the LoRa adapter to the serverless model with at the same cost and use it at the same cost. Nobody has provided that. That's because we have a very special, like, we rolled out multi-LoRa last year, actually. Mm-hmm. And we actually have this function for a long time. And many people have been using it, but it's not well known that, oh, if you fine-tune a model, you don't need to use on-demand. If you fine-tune model is LoRa, you can upload your LoRa adapter and we deploy it as if it's a new model. And then you get your endpoint and you can use that directly, but at the same cost as the base model. So I'm happy that user is marketing it for us.
Yeah.
he discovered that feature, yeah. But we have that for last year. So I think feedback to me is we have a lot of very, very good features as Sean just mentioned.
I was here to the company and I didn't know that you had speculative decoding released, you know?
We have palm catching way back last year also. We have many, yeah. So yeah, so I think that is one of the underrated feature. And if they're developers, you are using our self-serve platform, please try it out.
Yeah. The LoRa thing is interesting because I think you also, like, the reason people add additional cost to it is not because they feel like charging people. Like normally in normal LoRa serving setups, there is a cost to dedicating, loading those weights and dedicating a machine to that inference. How come you can avoid it?
Yeah, so this is kind of our technique called multi-LoRa. So we basically have many LoRa adapters share the same base model.
Yeah.
And basically we significantly reduce the memory footprint of serving. And one base model can sustain 100 to 1,000 LoRa adapters. And then basically all these different LoRa adapters can share the same, like direct the same traffic to the same base model, where base model is dominating the cost. So that's how we optimize that way. And that's why how we can manage the tokens per million token pricing the same as base model.
Awesome. Is there anything that you think you want to request from the community or you're looking for model-wise or tooling-wise that you think like someone should be working on in this?
Yeah, so we really want to get a lot of feedback from the application developers who are starting to build on Gen AI or on the already adopted or starting about thinking about new use cases and so on to try out Fireworks first. And let us know what works out really well for you and what is your wish list. And what sucks, right? So what is not working out for you? And we like to continuously improve. And for our new product launches, typically we want to launch to a small group of people. Usually we launch on our Discord first to have a set of people use that first. So please join our Discord channel. We have a lot of communication going on there. Again, you can also give us feedback. We'll have started office hour for you to directly talk with our DevRel and engineers to exchange more long notes.
And you're hiring across the board?
We're hiring across the board. We're hiring front engineers, infrastructure, cloud infrastructure engineers, backend system optimization engineers, applied researchers, and like researchers who has done post-training, who has done a lot of fine-tuning and so on.
Cool. That's it. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.